works into the high slot and shoots. He scores. Quinn Hughes in overtime, and he's the leading rookie scorer in the NHL.
Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Here's Horvat with a partial break down the left wing. Bo Horvat, in clean. He scores. The captain does it again.
This is Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
What is up? Welcome to Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss. Israel Fair filling in for the Boss today. Canucks Central brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Give yourself the Avenue advantage and stay under the cap by saving thousands on select Kubota skid steers and excavators. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. As mentioned, Israel Fair filling in today on a gorgeous Lower Mainland day. Stay cool. But what's going on, Izzy?
Good to be here, man. How you feeling? I know we're going to dive into some hockey here, but yeah. Euros, you were big invested in the Euro. I think we're going to get to that in the second hour. Unbelievable finish to that tournament. So I know that you were watching every game. You were getting up at 6 at the beginning of that tournament. So congrats to you for making it here. And now the hockey stuff's popping off. We got the expansion draft coming up. The entry draft, free agency, that's all coming up in the next couple of weeks. So I hope that you've got a little bit of that energy in reserve, Bick, to carry it on through to August, baby.
I'm sore today, man. It was a lot of celebrating, as you mentioned. It's been a while. It's been a month-long tournament, and it takes an effort to get here. So, today's a chill-out and conserve day. But you're right. It's going to get really busy here. These couple of days, it's the post MLB All-Star break. It feels like it's a dead spot in a world of sports every calendar year. But this year is different. Obviously, we have the Euros that just finished, and then the Olympics are going to be coming up. And then what you're talking about is the off season for the NHL. It's going to be busy, and it picked up obviously right away today. A trade went down. We're going to talk a couple of things about the Canucks, but we do want to start with the Duncan Keith trade. If you got thoughts on it, I know a lot of people were texting in during Rintoul and Sermon. Keep your thoughts coming in. 650-650. What do you think of the move? Do you think this improves the Edmonton Oilers? Where do you stand with it? Your thoughts are always going to be welcome. 650-650. And for me, when I look at this trade, there is a difference between price and value, right? That's the old term of... I think it was Buffett, of price is what you pay, value is what you get. So from the idea of Duncan Keith is on the Edmonton Oilers and why would they do this? I think, I made this the claim for Duncan Keith ending up in Vancouver too, of what are the benefits in doing so? And I do think there are real world on the ice benefits for the Edmonton Oilers having Duncan Keith. The problem is, are you going to make up the difference of cost of what it took you to bring him onto the team? Not just contractually, but also the cost of acquisition. And this is why sports radio stations are built. This is why columns get written about the idea of what are you paying to bring someone in and what value will they provide. And when you make trades of this level that carry this much amount of risk, both in the cost of acquisition and also how much you're actually paying Duncan Keith, it looks like it's going to be hard to overcome for the Edmonton Oilers.
Right. The first is what you're just seeing the reaction from people. And we were on the air together. I was filling in for C-Mac a couple of weeks ago when the news broke that this was likely going to happen, that Duncan Keith was going to move from Chicago, and that his preferred landing spots was, at the time being said, the Pacific Northwest or Western Canada, which if you know a little bit about geography, you could narrow it down to three or four teams. In the couple days after that, it became pretty clear it was probably going to be Edmonton. I guess there was still a bit of a subcurrent that the Kraken might be involved. And since then, it's been, okay, what is Edmonton going to give up to make this happen? And what's really coloring the analysis is, I think there's a pretty big variance in the way that people are valuing Duncan Keith as a player. There are those who are probably a little bit more slanted toward the analytics side that think he's done, that he can bring nothing to the table, even as a third pair, heavily sheltered defenseman. Obviously, that's not even what you would want from a player making what he'll be making for the next couple of years, but assuming that they take the contract out the window, they wouldn't even want him to face that role. And then there are some people that are closer to the middle and think that he's certainly not the number one D-man on a championship team. He's certainly not the player that he was 5-10 years ago, but that there is still somewhere that he can fit into a lineup and provide value. And Edmonton's making that bet. And I do think that if we're going to discuss the acquisition cost versus the salary, the brunt of the criticism is toward the salary and the cap space, especially as we head into this offseason. And they struck first. You know, you're talking about Warren Buffett, some of his analysis of what it's like to, mm-hmm. to play the stocks and play the money game. Well, often what happens when organizations or people want something real badly, they get out ahead of the market. That's what Edmonton has done here, because we're still expecting some moves across the NHL. We're expecting some moves here in Vancouver ahead of that expansion draft protection list submission. And the Oilers have decided, you know what, we value Duncan Keith at this level. We're willing to give up a player that was on a lot of the lists. Edmonton was thought that if they were going to move forward with their protection list, that Caleb Jones wasn't going to be a guy that they were going to be able to keep. He had a bit of an up-and-down year after last season, I think impressing a lot of people. But we've seen that with young defensemen, especially if they're playing limited minutes, limited role. It can be really tough to maintain that consistency. But obviously this was a cost that they felt was fair for a player in Duncan Keith, who's accomplished a lot in the games, but certainly there's some question marks about what he can do to help them out next season.
And that's what's so strange is you just mentioned there of this is what Edmonton valued it at, but there was no ask to value it at that, right? There was no demand. You knew he wanted to go to four cities or maximum four cities. Half of those weren't even going to be interested and couldn't pull it off. So to pay the price of what his value might be is so weird, because you had Chicago and a vice in this scenario to be able to apply some pressure. And the way this has turned out, you paid sticker price for a guy that wanted out, is aging. Like, he might retire in a year's time. Like, this could all go very wrong from a transactional point of view for Edmonton fairly easy. And you know, where does this leave them for the expansion draft now? It's, you got to fulfill that requirement. Duncan Keith's going to, I would assume, get protected now in this scenario. Darnell Nurse was obviously going to be a guy that gets protected. Ethan Bear is a player like I really like, and I would expect him to get protected here. And so, like, what's the status of Oscar Klefbom now in this scenario, right? We obviously know about a checkered injury history for him. That, to me, is something that is worth bringing up at this stage now. It's, what does that future look like for their blue line? It's nice to get Duncan Keith in, but to me, if you were hoping for like a return to form and a return to health for Oscar Klefbom, that future is a lot brighter than, I think, getting 2 years out of Duncan Keith.
It must be, this is purely speculation, but it must be that the news on Klefbom is not positive right now. It's been very quiet for a long time. He suffered a really tough injury. He's missed a lot of time at this point. And it seemed like reports out of Edmonton, columns out of Edmonton, that if he was in a position to play next year and make an impact, that they would have moved forward and figured something out. So my gut is telling me that the news there is not entirely positive when it comes to Oscar Klefbom. But when it comes to Keith, and Bick, you're a guy who, when you're analyzing sports, you're looking at what teams are adding. But a thing that's really important to you that I know is role. What's this guy's role going to be on this team? And in hockey, there is definitely an emphasis on the role that a player might have off the ice in the dressing room and all of that kind of stuff. And Duncan Keith's got the resume of a Stanley Cup champion, Conn Smythe, Norris Trophy, top 100 players of all time. The list goes on. I personally don't put a ton of value into that, especially if I'm trying to win today and the player is going to have to play somewhat of a substantial role. But this on the ice, the Oilers last year had an incredible power play unit. We know that Connor McDavid's good. We know Leon Draisaitl's good. Tyson Barry was the guy that filled that role for them. The thought out of Edmonton is that Evan Bouchard is eventually going to be the guy that's going to play there. And fortunately for Edmonton, and we could talk forever about the value of those ELCs right now. It's a guy who's coming in cheap and might be able to play at a high level on a power play. Duncan Keith used to do that. But at this point, I mean, I just don't see the thought of, okay, we're going to bring this guy to, you know, maybe be the second power play quarterback and play on a second pairing. The thought is that they will re-sign Adam Larson and that those two guys would play together. On paper, you'd have the rushing, attacking defender in Keith, who in his prime was about as good as anybody has been at it in the last 20 years, probably this side of Erik Karlsson. But at this point, it's really difficult to pinpoint what specific part of the role that they really think is going to give a boost to their team.
Yeah, obviously Nurse is, you know, anchoring that top side of the left side of their defense. So I still think there's value in Duncan Keith as far as like what he can do on the ice, right? He might not live up to five and change, but we're not talking about a guy that should be completely removed to the NHL, at least to me. I know a lot of people, you know, based on some of the numbers, say it's over. He's past his prime. I get it. But as far as the idea that he won't be able to fulfill a role for the Oilers, I do think that element of just a certain level of professionalism, I would say, is something the Oilers do need. And that is something Duncan Keith is going to bring game in, game out. You can argue the execution of it, but I think game in, game out, that is something they require. They can't have Chris Russell playing as many minutes as he does. They need real guys who have been through it all. And I look at Duncan Keith and I think, yeah, there's value in doing that. However, I'm not paying the price that they paid. 650, your thoughts coming in. Mike and Victoria thought Ken Holland was a good GM, but he got fleeced. And Marcus and Gibson's price of Nate Schmidt doesn't change in the market. Every other GM knows that this is a bad deal. Don't tell Ken Holland. The Schmidt aspect of this all is really interesting, too, because I think a lot of people do look at this and say, hey, if that's what Duncan Keith got, what does Nate Schmidt get in the trade market? I'm not sure if that's perfectly analogous like that, but I wouldn't put too much stock in the idea that this like hypes up Nate Schmidt's trade stock significantly.
Yeah, I don't see it. And like I said, what's driving this is the Duncan Keith resume. There's no doubt about it, and while Nate Schmidt has had a good career, and you look at his numbers and his play in Washington and in Vegas, and he's played for some winning teams, it's not even in the same stratosphere as the Duncan Keith, you know, trademark winner guy stuff. So what made Schmidt available to the Canucks last offseason was a cap crunch around the league with the flat cap. What's going to make his availability potentially interesting to teams outside of Vancouver, I think that's going to be probably post-expansion draft stuff, because we're going to see some of the players that are not at that salary range, I think, moved prior to the expansion draft in terms of making those lists work, and the teams, like a team like in Vancouver that has maybe a couple of spots up front that they could go and pick up a player from another team that's going to be in tough to protect all the players that they want. They want a little bit something back. I mean, we just saw Victor Arvidsson moved, a guy who's had a really solid career in Nashville, moved for a few picks. So the Schmidt one, he's in a tough spot. If he doesn't want things to work out in Vancouver, yeah. If he is committed on making that move, he's a good player. It's very similar, I think, to the acquisition of him last year, except he had a bit of an up-and-down year, so the value's maybe a little bit lower.
Bick Nizar, Israel Fair here on Canucks Central. Your thoughts coming up at 1:20 with Don't At Me. Keep texting in those 650-650. Because on the Canucks, Elliot Friedman, Friday night. I love the Friday night 31 Thoughts blog drop at like 9 o'clock. That was awesome. But he snuck it in there, number 9 for the Thoughts. Vancouver's looking for defense and a center with some heft. And that brought out the definitions of heft. What does heft mean to you? And immediately it's like, here we go. It's just like a 6'4", 220-pound center that can't move around the ice, and it's going to be just this, you know, plugger on the ice. I don't look at it like that in particular, because there's obviously been an insistence of trying to get a bit, you know, speed, and obviously, you know, veteran leadership was something that was mentioned before. But at the same time, like, it's hard to find guys who are fleet of foot with quote-unquote heft, Izzy. So I guess, what does heft mean to you?
I guess in today's NHL, it's about having the physical ability to withstand the matchup role, probably playing 18-20 minutes a night, and most importantly, being able to do some damage on the forecheck. And we know that the Canucks they've tried to do that with their bottom six. And sometimes it looks good, and they haven't had the results. But I mean, you look at a team like Tampa, and that third line with Coleman, Goudreau, and Gord. Gord's not a big guy by any means, but with two wingers that can absolutely get in there, have that punishing style, gain the puck back, all of that kind of stuff. The Canucks are looking for that down the middle. You're looking at a strong player that's not going to be the fastest player in the world, and is probably not necessarily going to bring a ton of offense and goal scoring potential. But I think teams around the league, I think these guys are kind of like unicorns at this point, right? It's easy to talk about it, and that's why I do understand why people go to the cynical side, the side that you just outlined, some plugger that's not going to have any impact whatsoever on the results on the ice, and is just there because it looks good and it makes sense from this top view management style.
I think when you hear that word, and just the idea that, hey, they want someone with some size, right? We can call it size. And I think if people leapt to the idea of like a Sean Corrali type, right, who's going to be a free agent, 6'2", 213 pounds. And look, maybe they wind up signing him and all that sort of stuff. I just want to paint a picture of the prototype, what people think. And it's like, oh, here we go. It's going to be this guy. I do kind of look at, like, Brandon Sutter has heft, quote unquote, right? It's like 195-ish pounds, you know, 6'1", like, that to me is a player that if you're trying to earmark a role to be third line center, which that's kind of what Brandon Sutter's meant to be, that makes a lot of sense to say our parameters for size are in and around that range. Now, again, for what you were talking about, in today's NHL, what does that mean? 25 years ago, it's, boy, I want Bobby Holík to be my third line center. And there's your heft, right?
Great reference.
But like, that's what was wanted, right? That's always been the idea of these guys that are just immovable objects. And when they're hounding you, because you know, once they get a stick on you, they're just so heavy and difficult to deal with. That doesn't really exist in today's NHL anymore, to be effective at least. You see Braden Point, like, he's not hefty, I get it. But you can't tell me he doesn't play a quote-unquote hefty game or a game. Like, he plays bigger than his size, and he's combative, and he's always energetic on the puck, and he's always difficult to play against. That's what you're looking for. And I think we're going to get too caught up in the semantics of what the specific size is rather than the style of player.
I mean, I think the term that comes to mind for someone like Point is that there's a relentlessness.
Yes.
Whereas, and that's, the game is played like that now. I mean, I just pulled up Bobby Holík's numbers, and this is how I remember him as a player. Like you said, immovable, just this huge hulking man, but also a one-shot scorer. If he had room in the offensive zone to get his shot off, he could pinpoint. And if you look at Brandon Sutter's career, he's got the ability to skate a little bit more. And when he's had the time and the space, he can be a one-shot scorer in the NHL. His reputation in Vancouver, there's so many layers put onto that because of the acquisition costs. I mean, the same kind of stuff that we're talking about with Duncan Keith. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff really overshadows or can overshadow what the real on-ice contributions that a player can make. And in Sutter's case, for a lot of his career in Vancouver, he has not been healthy, and that's disappointing. But that is what I think the type of player that they're looking for if they can make it work. I mean, you bring up Sean Corrali, who's played in Boston for a long time. The only reason I remember this is because I was doing some research when the Canucks signed Tim Schaller. Those two guys played together on a fourth line in Boston that was big on forechecking, and they didn't play a ton of minutes. They'd play 10 minutes a night, but that was what they were supposed to bring, and that they could produce a little bit of offense. So that would be funny if they go and after it didn't really work out with Tim Schaller to get his line mate from a couple of years ago, who maintained his effectiveness for the most part in Boston, but I don't imagine we'll be going back there based on some of the moves that they have to make. So would be available as a free agent.
Bick Nizar, Israel Fair. It's 1:20. We do it every day on Canuck Central. It's Don't At Me. Don't At Me, it's for lease busters. Need or want out of your car lease, avoid early termination and the negative equity cost by going to leasebusters.com. Guaranteed lease relief. Send your text messages in, 650-650. I'm going non-hockey division today, Izzy. Don't At Me, Gareth Southgate, congratulations, you played yourself. Don't At Me.
Love it. Love
it. We'll get into it more after 2 o'clock, but with the Euros. But I just thought all the things I was concerned about for England, and I echoed them quite a bit throughout the course of the Euros. They came to roost right at the end.
I'm gonna stick with the Euro theme as well. Don't At Me, Giorgio Chiellini. You are real lucky that you did not get sent off, my friend, for one of the most cynical challenges, tackles. That was, I mean, veteran play, heady play, the meme pointing at the temple. The guy knew what he's doing, but whew, in any other game, in any other spot, man, that is tough to imagine that's not a sending off.
I loved it. I loved it. I think yellow's fine. Yellow's fine for me. I get it. It looks super cynical. You want the red. I get it. That's just a classic. Hey, guy's got a chance. He's proven a threat. Knock him over, and away you go. That's a yellow every time. this one. It's not a don't at me. I just want to read it. I can't believe you used the words Heft and Sutter in the same tenth sentence. The only Heft is his hefty contract. I've lost all respect for your program. Don't at me, I guess. The only Heft is his hefty contract. There you go. Don't at me, Stephen Surrey. If the Canucks acquired Keith, I still would have booed him every time he touched the puck. Good pass, Jim. This one, David Richmond. Don't at me. All this time off. Guest hosts. Bic is the boss. Not quite. I'm trying.
He's working his way there.
Actually, C-Mac will join us later today. C-Mac,
can't wait. Yeah.
Boss is a busy man. Look, and sometimes that's why we gotta go to the bullpen and tag in Izzy. But the boss, he didn't want to miss talking about the Euros. So the boss will join us later today at 2:30 alongside Anthony Stewart will join us at 2 o'clock as well. Don't at me. The Copa final was better than the Euro final, and no one talks about it. Lucas, did you watch Messi?
I didn't.
I checked enough of it out. I didn't have an eye.
I was following it. I saw his miss. Late in the game.
Man.
That was tough. But look
even the best have their moments.
So good for him. He's got the Copa. The difference. The part of the reason it doesn't get nearly the same respect as the Euros. It's a weird tournament. I mean, one time they decided to play back to back years because it was a centennial. Sometimes they invite countries that aren't in South America to play. Mm-hmm. It's a bit all over. But I mean, the entertainment value can be tremendous.
Don't at me, Mitch and Victoria. If the Canucks got the Keith deal, if it was the Canucks who got Keith for that deal today, C-Mac would be touting this as a great move for the Canucks and praising Jim Benning. He's not even here to defend himself. I love it. Keep the text coming in. Adam, the former Bath guy. We Canucks fans now even have more reason to hate the Oilers. Don't at me. Yeah, hey, look, that rivalry's going to be there. An interesting element of that is, Edmonton's meant to be a geographical rival for the Vancouver Canucks. It's never really been there, but here's a hated player now ending up there. At the same time, your real geographical rival is emerging in Seattle Kraken.
It's almost there, man. We've talked about it for so long. They're finally going to have players that yeah. Canucks fans can target.
Chris and Nanaimo, last one here. Don't at me. Benning can't screw up the Schmidt trade now. That's Chris from Nanaimo. That's a closer for today. We'll be back in a bit. We'll talk to Jonathan Willis from The Athletic in Edmonton about the Duncan Keith trade. Keep sending in your comments, 650-650. Bick Nizar, Israel Fair here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back, Canucks Central. Bick and the boss. The boss is temporarily away today. Israel Fair filling in. We will talk to C-Mac later on today. Get his thoughts on Euros 2020. You can't wait an extra day to fire off your Euro 2020 take. So C-Mac, in meetings, very important meetings, but will join us at some point throughout the course of the show. Canuck Central brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Give yourself the Avenue advantage and stay under the cap by saving thousands on select Kubota skid steers and excavators. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. You heard coming back there the voice of Mark Spector. He joined Rintoul and Sermon earlier today before the trade. It hasn't been officially announced, but widely reported. Caleb Jones going from Edmonton to Chicago with a third-round pick. And going back the other way is Duncan Keith. And, okay, you brought up a name earlier, Izzy, in Tyson Barrie, of, you know, a guy that they had there. And, you know, where does Keith's role evolve now? You know, what's really fascinating to me is how they have, you know, building this out, they've taken essentially the Tyson Barrie cap hit from last season and just applied it to, and added to it, actually, to Duncan Keith here. It just, like, that part of it is why, like, I was expecting, if you're going to do this, like, salary retention or that sort of stuff, to maximize potential value out of the trade. But they're taking on the full freight of the deal. It's just like, this move is so puzzling from a transaction point of view.
That's the stunner. The expectation was that there would absolutely have to be salary retained. You know, when the columns and the news out of Chicago is that they're stunned that there was no salary retained, you can imagine how people in Edmonton are feeling when the hometown team is going, wow, I can't believe that that we just moved off that deal, that the Blackhawks were able to trade Duncan Keith, who had given a very short list of teams that he was interested in going to, and there was nothing there. I mean, it brings to mind, to some degree, some of the trades that we have seen in Vancouver that have gotten criticized, where it felt like, well, I mean, think about when JT Miller was acquired. The thought was Tampa needs to move somebody. He's making $5 million. Yeah. Why did the Canucks have to pay a premium, et cetera, et cetera? And there was a lot of blowback on that move. And JT Miller was in the prime of his career. Duncan Keith is not. And it's not a first-round pick going the other way. It's a defenseman prospect who's had some bright moments in the NHL and then some more question marks and a third, which, I mean, if you watch the Tampa Bay Lightning, third-round picks aren't meaningless. So there's some value there on top of taking on that 5.5. That's hefty. That's the real heft.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. That's hefty.
Heft today. That's significant. They must have an idea of a defined role for Duncan Keith, and I hope it goes beyond simply he's winner guy. He won in Chicago. He's one of the greatest players of the last 20 years, and he's going to be able to find that game in Edmonton.
Greg, is Jonathan Willis ready? Oh, sorry, I wasn't sure if you were talking my ear there. All right, we do have Jonathan Willis here from The Athletic in Edmonton. Jonathan, thank you very much for giving some time today. You know, we were just kind of just talking about the trade, and you know, you look back in this Ken Holland tenure now spanning 2 years, and like obviously we all recognize a certain level of urgency was required to, you know, sell the idea of, you know, to Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, hey, this isn't meant to just be a team that doesn't make the playoffs. We're here to support you guys, and we want to go to the playoffs. And at the same time, while you have to execute on that plan, I do look at this now. Is it six or seven draft picks traded in 2 years in that middle rounds? And it feels like burning currency that is going to be hard to replace. And all they have to show for it in this whole stretch of time is Duncan Keith now.
Well, it's funny you mentioned burning currency, because honestly, you could have taken that third round draft pick and lit it on fire and potentially be further ahead than the Oilers are today after making this trade. But I hate to put it that way, because I don't want to denigrate Duncan Keith, who's been a phenomenal defenseman for so long. But realistically, I'm not even worried about that third round pick. If I'm the Oilers, I'm looking at the $5.5 million in cap space in a flat cap world that they burnt, 2 weeks before they're heading into the biggest buying season of the year. So that, to me, is the great concern. A lot has been made of the way Ken Holland has had his hands tied financially by the previous regime. And you know, the narrative in Edmonton since he took over has been just wait. He's going to have some money. And when he has some money, that's when he'll improve the team. Well, now he has money, and we've seen how he's going to use it.
Jonathan, when you look at, the totality of the deal and the way that it's been leading here for the last couple of weeks since the news broke that Keith was looking to move and that his destinations list was pretty short. And now that the deal has been consummated and that it's not changing anyway, that there's no salary retained, the pick and the prospect or the player have been moved. Is there any change at this point of where the initial thoughts were when the rumor linking Keith to Edmonton first surfaced?
Not really. I think this is as bad as people thought it was going to get, because, fans understand this. We've been playing 15 years now in a salary cap environment. They understand the financial perspective. I mean, I agree with my colleague Mark Lazarus, who said, it's frankly shocking that this trade was made without the Blackhawks retaining any salary. And you mentioned a limited number of trade destinations. Lazarus went even further. He went, the Blackhawks really had no other potential trading partner but Edmonton. This was entirely driven by Duncan Keith. He had a full no-move clause. He had the ability to dictate his terms. And despite this, the Chicago Blackhawks have managed to make a pretty darn good trade and not find themselves on the hook for any of his money. And it's funny, you go back to when they signed Keith to that long back-diving contract. The narrative when they did that was, okay, yes, it's going to hurt at the end. He's going to be overpaid when he's 38, 39, but we're going to win a Stanley Cup right now. Well, it turns out they got to win their Stanley Cups, and they got to not have to pay him when he was overpaid at 38 and 39.
Yeah, it's actually have their cake and eat it too scenario.
Exactly,
Chicago.
Exactly. This should be the playbook for any team that's in a contending window. Sign your old player forever, and as soon as he deteriorates, trade him to some sucker who thinks they need veteran leadership.
So in a vacuum, and the reason I brought up the seven picks earlier is it's the totality of these moves, right? And what's the reward?
Yeah,
but in a vacuum, like I can stomach the idea of, hey, and I think it's going to be a future third-round pick here because they don't have their 2021
pick. No, they don't have
anyways.
One this year. Yeah.
Yeah. So in a vacuum, if you just said, hey, it's a mid pick for, and I think Duncan Keith's got more to offer even at 38 than people want to admit. But okay,
yeah,
Caleb Jones, he's had some struggles and all that. In a vacuum, I can live with the deal. It's exactly what you just talked about. It's a salary retention on top of everything. It feels like you willingly stepped into the bear trap when, if you were just manage the money a bit better, it doesn't look as bad. But when you add in the context of all the moves so far and what's the actual holding return, like Athanasiu's gone, all these guys are gone. They're no longer part of the Oilers roster that's coming up. It's just Duncan Keith. And I just look at this, it's like it's a salary issue that is going to be the tough one to overcome. And that's why, like, I'm sure the reaction in Edmonton is poor, but I look at this and it's hard to sell this with losing the idea that losing the trade because you didn't retain salary.
Yeah. It's, you're right to emphasize the totality. And Athanasiu, I really do have trouble hammering them on that, because they made the deal, the deadline, right before the pandemic, right before the league shut down for the year. Like at that, and maybe we can look back and with hindsight say they should have realized that all these teams were going to take a financial hit and things were going to change. Because to me, if it's an $84.5 million cap world, they probably qualify Andreas Athanasiou. Now, whether they're further ahead, qualifying him is a fair point, too, because he certainly played for a lot less than L.A., and I don't think it's a guaranteed thing that L.A. keeps him on. But, yeah, they've burned a lot of draft capital for not much, really, and that's a problem. I think at the moment, fans tend to look at what the team looks like on the ice more than worrying about that draft capital, but it's a reasonable thing to point out and certainly something they're going to regret in a few years' time when they don't have prospects coming in the pipeline.
This Keith move, from the outside anyway, stinks of, older front office executive attaching winner guy, Hall of Famer, Duncan Keith, going to come into the dressing room and fix all of that and maybe convincing themselves, as I think we all agree, that in the right spot, Duncan Keith may be able to provide some value. Now that he's going to be with the Oilers and there's still going to be some moving parts with the expansion draft coming up, in your view, what's the ceiling for Keith? How should he be used to maximize the value that may still exist?
Well, one thing that I will say, from a glass half full perspective, a lot of analytics people are just hammering this move because he's 38 years old and had a 42% on ice expected goal share at 5-on-5 last year, and that's all true. But I think that's much more floor than ceiling. I don't think, he's older now, he's going to be even worse. I don't think that's true. If you look historically at how guys who have continued to get minutes despite getting lit up in terms of scoring chances, how they perform going forward, usually there's a reason they kept getting those minutes. Like, as much as, some analytics guys like to just pretend coaches are morons, usually the coach has the guy out there for a reason, and despite what the chance data is showing. So I think Keith is going to show a little bit more in Edmonton than a lot of people expect, but it's not a certainty. And the thing is, you're paying $5.5 million over you're taking on a $5.5 million cap hit over 2 years for that privilege. For a guy who is maybe your second pair defenseman, but very well might be a third pairing guy. And if he's a third pairing guy, well, then, you're right back in the James Neal situation again.
Jonathan Willis from The Athletic joining us here on Canuck Central with Bick and Israel Fair. So what does this mean? The other interesting part of this is they've made the trade before the expansion draft and the protection list. So when you see this trade happen, what gears kind of start clicking in your head? Because I look at this and I think, boy, Oscar Klefbom feels like going to get exposed, and maybe there's a bigger conversation of where he is at in his career.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. I don't know if it changes things from an expansion perspective, because they might have chosen to protect Jones over Klefbom anyway, depending on Klefbom's health. He missed all of last year, obviously. There's a real concern that Oscar Klefbom's not going to be able to continue his NHL playing career. Now, of course, Duncan Keith has a no-move clause. I haven't heard definitively whether or not that's still in effect. My understanding is that it probably will be, that he probably would have agreed to waive it for this move only, and Edmonton will continue to honor it, which means he'll take up a protected slot in expansion. But I don't know if that's a huge concern. We're not. I mean, Klefbom would be a heck of a gamble for Seattle if he was healthy, but at the moment, I don't think anybody expects him to be ready to start the 2021-22 season.
Now that this move is more or less made, we're still waiting for the confirmation. How does this change the way that you view the way how Edmonton's going to go about this offseason as they try to continue to build out the roster?
It doesn't shift much, really. They've got pretty finite resources in terms of futures, as we've kind of beaten to death here. So I don't know that they're going to be super active on the trade front. I think they'll go to free agency and they'll try and get a forward or two, and if they can get a goalie, they'll get a goalie. Mikko Koskinen, who supposedly Edmonton wanted Chicago to take Koskinen back in this trade and couldn't convince them to do it, he kind of clogs up their cap space in net, and the fact he wasn't part of this trade is maybe the biggest thing going forward. They spent a little bit more money at the second pair position than I would have expected, so they won't have as much money when they go to market, but they still have enough cap space to sign a fairly high-end forward, which I think they will do.
He is Jonathan Willis from The Athletic. Actually, before I let go, one last question. Are the Oilers better for the 20, like, is the team better on ice for next season than what we saw this past season with this trade?
Well, pre-trade, I would have said yes, because they've got a lot of young guys who are going to improve just by virtue of being in the league another year. But Caleb Jones was one of those young guys.
Right.
Is Duncan Keith better next season than Caleb Jones is next season? I don't know. To me, if I'm going to say yes, the big argument is going to be the one that a lot of people have made, which is that, you know, he's this fierce workout king. He's going to be an important leader for Edmonton. He's going to bring a lot of intangibles. And I do think intangibles matter. I really do. But I don't know that we can know in advance how that's going to play out. And I certainly wouldn't want to bank on it to say, yes, the Oilers will definitely be better. So I know I hate to sit on the fence on you there, but I feel like it's kind of a, we'll see what happens. And right now it's very debatable.
He is Jonathan Willis from The Athletic in Edmonton. Thanks a lot. And we'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Take care, guys.
That's a great Jonathan Willis. You can follow him on Twitter at Jonathan Willis on Twitter. And the reason I asked is, like, are they better? Is, you know, for the Vancouver Canucks, like, that's the bar, or not necessarily the bar, but, like, you've got to close the gap between where Vancouver resides right now and where Edmonton is. And if we start looking at the Pacific Division, I think a lot of people are, you know, earmarking Vegas number one. Like, they'll be the first seed in the Pacific Division for the upcoming season. And right now, I would say the stock resides with Edmonton, people earmarking them to finish second. And so, if you're Vancouver, technically, like, as we talked about, for the health of the franchise of the Edmonton Oilers, this probably wasn't a great move when you're projecting 5, 7, 10 years down the road. Because these picks matter, and you keep going through them, and you keep, you know, trading them away to get rid of Lucic so you can get James Neal. Like, they've dealt away a lot of picks here. But for the upcoming season, part of me does feel like they are marginally a better team. Duncan Keith, he didn't forget how to play hockey. You're getting a lesser version of him, I get it, at age 38, but he's not forgotten how to play this game. Can he do it consistently every night like he did when he was a Norris winner? No, but he's going to have a role in this team. So I do think they're better for next season. And we all know next season is about getting back to the playoffs for the Vancouver Canucks. And I kind of just feel like the bar might have been raised just a marginally bit higher for the Vancouver Canucks. And now two spots might already be taken away from them, and they're fighting for third.
Right. And I mean, Calgary's in that disappointment mix as well. If you were to stack the rosters up on paper, I think the high end slightly favors Vancouver, but the depth in Calgary, as disappointing of last year was, and they made their big move with the Jacob Markstrom contract, and he started off well. Their season tailed off. His season tailed off. I think it's too early to say this is a Bobrovsky situation with Jacob Markstrom in Calgary. I think there are a lot of possibilities. There's a high chance that he comes back and he's a much better player, a more consistent goalie for them next year, and that'll change. I still think that they need to change something at this point with that group, and that'll be, you know, huge part of the offseason. But the Canucks they're in a similar spot where they've got questions about rounding out that roster around their top players, and it's gonna make for a fascinating offseason. Just to, now that we're back to the regular divisions, to see how they fit in there, because last year, heading into last season anyway, spent a lot of time talking about where the Canucks fit among the Canadian teams. Now we're back to the usual rivals, and wouldn't it be something if the Seattle Kraken had a Vegas type season?
Well, I was just gonna say, if you look at the Pacific Division, right, I'm comfortable saying the Vegas Golden Knights are going to the playoffs, right? The Edmonton Oilers, to me, going to the playoffs. McDavid's too good. Over 82 games. Draisaitl, him, will carry them. What seed they are, to be determined, but they're going to the playoffs. I'm comfortable saying that. I'm also comfortable writing off Arizona and Anaheim, right? Just not good enough. It's too hard to sustain. Too many holes. They're done. The other teams, then, it's LA, San Jose, Calgary, Vancouver, and now the Seattle Kraken. You could convince me that they could finish second. You could convince me that they're going to finish second to last in this division, or third to last in this division. And how this all plays out, because a lot of things can flip really easy. The Kings, with a bunch of their young stars, what if they're just ahead of schedule? And then suddenly, that's a young team pushing. Calgary, what if the things that the level of investment that they made, what if that just pays off? They have a good floor. We've always wondered about their ceiling. And then Vancouver, like, it's the same question. I think they have a high ceiling, but their floor isn't defined. And that's why we have these swing conversations of, well, I think they're this, I think they're this. It's because the spectrum of possibilities for Vancouver is so wide, and they can look good defensively in the bubble and then just be a shell of it come the season following. And by the metrics, you could probably say, the worst defensive team in hockey last year.
Yeah.
And then the Kraken, right? Like, yeah, the Kraken, we literally don't know anything about them because they don't have any players just yet. We'll get into that conversation, I guess, moving forward as well. How much activity are you expecting to see this week? We'll throw that by Anthony Stewart. He joins us in a couple of minutes here on Bick and the Boss here on the home of the Canucks Sportsnet 650.